Welcome to the Value Engineering Experts Podcast. In this show, Martin Halliwell explores cutting-edge technologies aimed at addressing the climate crisis in the built environment through thoughtful conversations with industry experts. Here's your host, Martin Halliwell.
Welcome to another interesting episode of the Value Engineering Experts. Today, I have a guest, and you won't believe it, that does a golf podcast, and he produces our show. So he has insights on podcasts. He has a lot of value as a producer to his team. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming on. I thought in some ways your story was an interesting one, and I thought for the construction industry that I'm a big part of, there's a lot of golfers, and we're going to work to get your subscribers up.
I love it.
So Matt Cook does probably the first real golf podcast, and it's called Pull Hook. And it's interesting because there's famous people that he interviews, and like your co-host right now is Bobby Brown, right? Who used to be a caddy with Dustin Hoffman, right?
Dustin Johnson. Yeah, he was his caddy for a long time. And I mean, he was very early on. He even lived with Dustin Johnson, and he says he was one of his best friends.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. Like, never got the ego bug thing, eh?
Dustin. No, he never did. He's very down to earth. He loves to trash talk a little bit. and that's what is great about the podcast is, you know, we've got it unfiltered to where we do. We share the real side to golf and the real side to the players. And Bobby does a great job because he's a San Diego guy. So he's got this mellow kind of calmness to him. He's always very positive, but at the same time, he can talk trash pretty well, especially on the show. So we have a good time with it.
I did the pre-interview with Matt. It wasn't significant, but it was good enough to say to Matt, don't swear on my podcast. So then Matt, when I asked you that, I said, well, why do you swear on your podcast?
And well, so that's because golf is golf is a four-letter word. I mean, it's a swear word in its own right. I mean, how many times do you go out and play golf? Golf is a maddening sport. So we try to bring the realness to the podcast, just like you would be out there golfing with your buddies, having a drink or two or whatever it may be while you're out on the golf course. And, you know, you may drop a couple four-letter words while you're out there when you get a little frustrated and so forth. So we try to be relaxed with it. We don't really want the swearing to be kind of too much, so to speak. We want it to kind of have an impact when we do tend to drop in certain words and so forth. But we like it to be casual. Like, I'm on the show, I'm drinking scotch usually, and, you know, everybody's relaxed, and it gives that kind of relaxed feeling because that's when the truth comes out. That's when people really start to become themselves. And I'm drinking water today. So we've got a daytime show here. And I told Martin, I'm like, no alcohol for me, no swearing, I promise.
My story, I quit alcohol and all those influences, and I did enough of it in my life. I'm a nicer person now.
It is funny how
I'd be swearing on my podcast if I was drinking still. Even like the day before, I was always affected by like three drinks a day for a week.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Don't cross me then, man.
Yeah, that'll get you.
I had pressures in business. I had so many employees, right? Anyway, didn't help my career at the end. But then I wised up after the two wives, right? Which is probably a good golf thing. Let's talk about some of your golfers.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about the live tour, right? Your golfers, like, and you say swear. Like, I know there's a lot of guys that when they hit a hook, right?
The good old pull hook. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It comes out and it comes out harsh. And I mean, maybe the TV picks it up.
Maybe I should change because, you know, if I swore, maybe the construction guys would follow me more. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Matt, tell me what the podcast, because you do a lot of different productions on podcasts, and tell me what the hockey stick you say the podcast hockey stick.
Yeah, the good old podcast hockey stick. So this is a well-known term within the podcast industry, to where if you think of a hockey stick, you've got pretty much a flat area and then it goes up at an angle. Well, that's how podcasts are, because podcasts in general, you tend to, how do I put it? You tend to not have a whole lot of word of mouth that takes place right away. Normally takes a long period of time. So a lot of times, if you've got a podcast out there that, you know, you're between anywhere from, I mean, even if you have just a couple subscribers that are following your podcast and listening to it, when you think about it, over a period of time, there's so many podcasts that end too short and never realize that upward tick of the hockey stick. And that's one of the biggest failures to podcasts in general, especially for businesses, because they're like, oh, we're just not seeing the growth. Well, this isn't one that you see the growth right away. It takes a year or two before. And you even look at people like Pat Flynn. Pat Flynn is a big time podcaster, been doing it for a long time. I think 10 plus years, teaches podcast stuff, and gives tips and tricks on YouTube. And sure enough, he talks about the exact same thing with the podcast hockey stick. And it's just one of those things to where you gotta keep going. And if you get up to 50 people listening to your podcast on a weekly basis, think about that. If there's 50 people, especially from a business standpoint, right? If you go into an auditorium and you have 50 people in there, that's going to be a lot more people than you think about when you look at just the number from a data and analytics standpoint. Also, that one person from a business perspective, that could be a game changer for your business. It could end up being a client, could end up being an investor, could end up being somebody that licenses patents, for instance. Like, you never know who's listening to the podcast. And that's why one person can be the game changer for your business. And that's why it's become so popular with businesses. So to give everybody a little bit of context as to my normal day-to-day role outside of being the host of the Pull Hook Golf Podcast, I'm also the director of the podcast agency at Mission Matters, which we work with businesses just like Martin's, to where we help produce and distribute podcasts for all different business types. We've even recently launched a podcast network full of talented hosts. I mean, we have one of Tony Robbins' disciples on there. We've got others that, you know, big in business. So
part of that.
Say that one more time.
Is Adam a part of that?
So Adam Torres, he's the CEO of the company, and he's obviously the host of the Mission Matters podcast, and he's got 8 different shows on there. So Adam's a very busy man. So that's why he gave the ranks or the reins over to me to run our podcast agency and network. So I've got a complete team underneath me that does a fantastic job, from audio engineers to project managers to account managers. So yeah, it's a pretty well-oiled machine that we've got going. And it was one of the reasons why I decided to get started with Pull Hook Golf, because I was missing the golf industry. I was like, man, you know, I haven't been around it that much lately. I'm a former professional golfer. I like to refer to myself as a mini tour dropout, and I just couldn't hack it. It was between the ears, Martin. I wish I could drink on the golf course back then, because I was a lot more sane. It was when we talk about those swear words, I was dropping quite a few.
I guess you can't drink. Is it banned? Like, they won't let you drink? It makes for bad TV.
If you ask John Daly, you never know what's in his water bottle, okay? So they're not checking that before a golf round. But yeah, it is definitely frowned upon. Same thing with tobacco a lot of times. I mean, there's been guys out there like Spencer Levine. If you look up this kid, I played with this kid in a qualifier once for a PGA Tour event. Great golfer, great guy, and he smokes the most amount of cigarettes I've ever seen in my life. He'll go through 2 packs in one golf round. And then he would have to get out onto the tour and kind of hide it and, you know, be smoking off to the side while the cameras aren't looking and so forth. So it's definitely something.
And disciplined all the time. Like, what's the fine for that?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, Mark. I actually don't know the dollar amount for that fine. Now, I never made it that far to get onto the PGA Tour, but obviously, like I said, my co-host, he's been caddying on tour for years, and he would be the one, for instance, where that would be a question I'd ask him. I'd be like, how much are they getting fined out there? Now, not really supposed to, especially on the PGA Tour. They love to keep all the suspensions and all the fines private. Like, you never really hear, like, you hear rumblings about it, especially from media outlets. Like, for instance,
they don't even talk about the affairs and shit, do they?
No. And certainly
that would be good for the hockey stick.
It would be good for the hockey stick. But guys just like Dustin Johnson, for instance, got caught up in some of that stuff. Phil Mickelson, most recently, when he was recruiting PGA Tour pros to go over to LIV Golf. See, everybody thinks that he got suspended, but the PGA Tour never comes out and says that. So nobody really knew what he got suspended for or how. And everybody was thinking that it was his comments on the Saudis. But really, it was his recruitment of trying to bring players over to LIV Golf. And the PGA Tour didn't really like that. So the...
Well, he had like a probably... like you maybe don't know. I mean, he got $200 million, right?
Yeah, he got a lot of money, Martin. He had a lot of gambling debt that he had to pay off. He owed a lot of people some money.
I remember that story. He's such a sweet guy.
Right? Yeah, Alan Shipnuck came out with a book telling all on that one and all the gambling and so forth. So, pretty interesting stuff. If you get a chance for a read, that book is it's pretty enlightening as to kind of the personal life and so forth of Phil Mickelson.
Wow, that's... my heart goes out to the guy because I thought he had a bit of class and he was always nice, you know, to the fans. And
It's a little bit of a charade there, you know, for the cameras. He's a little bit different of a person, but I'll tell you what, all of my interactions with Phil have been fantastic. I mean, I actually, the first time I met him was just outside of Liberty National.
On your show.
We're not that close there, Martin. I mean, first time I met him, it was at a restaurant, just won the Open Championship. So he had the claret jug with him. And he's sitting there with a bunch of PGA Tour officials. And they were playing Liberty National that week. And I lived in New York City at the time. So I happened to be at the same restaurant. Well, they're finishing up dinner. I'm never one to go over and introduce myself. But we were trying to work on a deal with him at the time when I was in golf technology. And he was very gracious at the end of the dinner. He got up, took a picture with all of us and, let me hold the claret jug. And he was joking around and everything. I mean, he was probably 5 or 6 bottles of wine deep at that point, but he was super nice. And every interaction I've had with him since has been a positive one. So I can't sit here and tell you that it is 100% a charade, but everybody that you speak with within the tour and from the inside scoop and everything, they tend to, have a different story.
So he's a little overweight, right? Like you wouldn't think he's kind of the guy who pushes the weights too much. But, you know, it was interesting. I was watching an NFL game and they were talking about Brady's, right? And Brady's thing about you don't want to lift weights. You want to stretch, right? So his career, he attributes a lot to holding his rifle arm because he never pushed the weights. Right?
Yeah, a lot of golf now, and I mean, we're even seeing it in the young juniors out there that play on the AJGA Tour, which is the big national tour for juniors, but they're 16 to 18-year-old kids hitting the ball 315 yards. I was astonished because there was a golf technology company that does a launch monitor that we were talking about off air, and they measure how fast the golf ball is going, the direction, how far it goes, the spin rates, and then even some of the swing characteristics like swing path, how fast you're swinging the club. I mean, these kids are hitting at 315 yards at 16 years old, so there's definitely some weight training that has been introduced into golf. But like I recently started with a personal trainer that is golf specific. He's in the top 50 by Golf Digest. As trainers, he works with a lot of PGA Tour pros out here in Scottsdale. And Andrew Hannon, I mean, my God, this guy, he is, I didn't know. And like I did some when I was playing, not a ton, but it was more stretching to what you talked about. Now it's more or less stretching mixed with functional strength training, and then there is some lifting that goes on as well. And I've already gone and added about 10 yards. I mean, I went from about 100, I've always been around 115 mile an hour club head speed with a driver, which means you're going to hit it right around 290 yard carry, maybe 300, depending on the equipment that you're using and some of the latest drivers. Now you can carry it that far, but Now I'm up to about 120 mile an hour club head speed. So I'm in it well past 300 at this point. And I'm like, wow, that happened relatively quick. But yeah, golf is definitely flexibility plays a big role.
On those golf monitors, do they?
No.
You pull a hook, you can say, fuck. The coach probably doesn't want that. And, you know, it's all image stuff, right? So let's say my value engineering analogy, you know, actionable verb, measurable noun. So when it comes to the live term, make money. It seems to be everyone's thinking make money. And you had some interesting comments about live term, and they've sued the
They did. You know, they were on a really good track record to where, like, they were easy to defend because I try to always take a neutral approach and view things because I have a knack to be able to put myself in different people's shoes no matter what my opinion is. And when I do that, I was looking at it, I'm like, it's hard to say that this isn't a good thing for golf right now because it's bringing in a different demographic of fan. It was the fan that during the pandemic started going out to the top golfs of the world and started going out to the golf courses to get outside, to not be locked up. And they're your typical other sports fans who now all of a sudden they're getting addicted to golf. They like music on the golf course. They like the entertainment side. And that's where LIV Golf was really hitting something that the PGA Tour doesn't really provide outside of the Waste Management Open, which is here in Scottsdale, Arizona. But that's once a year. But LIV is doing it every single week. And they were doing such a great job with the team aspect. Like if you've played college golf, like the team aspect is actually a fantastic thing. And even at the President's Cup, which the first tee of the President's Cup is right behind me on my background here. So that is almost that stadium type of feel. You have your teams and everybody talks about the team aspect being really cool in golf because normally golf is just an individual sport. So you got you and your caddy and that's about it. But when you have a team, then you're pulling for somebody else. You're trying to make sure that you're still playing well because your scores might matter. So LIV did a good job from that. But as soon as they went and all these guys received all this guaranteed money, and I was a fan of the guaranteed money, I think it loosens guys up. Doesn't make you as kind of serious isn't the right word, but you can have a little bit more personality out there. And Bobby and I talked about this with Dustin Johnson because he's like, watch Dustin. He's so casual out there on a Sunday coming down the stretch, being in contention to win. And he's out there laughing with his opponent. He goes, you think that would have ever happened on the PGA Tour? No, because it's a lot of money difference between those spots. But when you get paid $100 million, $200 million, I've even heard the upwards of $300 million on some of these contracts. And it's like, whew, it's yeah, when all of a sudden you're playing for $4 million, it's not that much money anymore. When all of a sudden you got $300 million as a guarantee. So when all of a sudden the antitrust lawsuit came out, so the LIV players, and not all of them, but a select group sued the PGA Tour and they wanted their cake and they wanted to eat it too. At least that's how I felt. That was my opinion on the entire thing was that, wow, that's really greedy. Like you chose to go over to LIV Golf. And I've disagreed with how Jay Monahan handled it from the beginning. But the one thing Jay did, and he's the commissioner of the PGA Tour, he drew a line in the sand. He said, if you guys are going to go over to LIV Golf, you're going to be suspended from the PGA Tour. You won't be able to play on this tour again. And he was very clear about that. So they made those decisions. But now it's kind of come out that they were kind of told, hey, we're going to fight this. We're going to make sure you guys are able to get status back on the PGA Tour. We're going to get you guys world golf rankings and all of these things are outside of LIV Golf's control. So now you got this murky water that has creeped in and it made those guys look greedy. And recently, as of yesterday even, three more players dropped out of the lawsuit. So now there's just three players left. It originally started, I think, around 12 players or 10 players on LIV Golf were all part of this antitrust lawsuit to try to play on the PGA Tour again.
Tell me something like that would... Let me guess, like probably because the promotions companies were starting to say, you know, too much. In other words, they were losing because these guys on LIV Tour, they would still have sponsors, right?
they still have sponsors. Some of them dropped them. So some of the sponsors let them go. So for instance, Phil lost a lot of his sponsors, and Callaway, his manufacturer, golf equipment manufacturer, put his deal on pause for a period of time. I still don't know if they've unpaused it. They haven't publicly said, but he's still playing Callaway equipment and so forth. But yeah, a lot of these guys lost sponsors. Patrick Reed lost sponsors. That's why Patrick Reed wears Live Golf as a sponsor on his clothing, even though apparently he's not sponsored by Live Golf. It's just that obviously he doesn't have other sponsors to go there. So that's a lot of what's been going on there. And then you got somebody like Dustin Johnson. We talked about this 2 weeks ago on the Pull Hook Golf podcast. Bobby started to clue me in a little bit around, you know, some of the talk between the agents and so forth. And it seems like we better cherish these next couple of years with Dustin Johnson, because most likely he's got a 3-year contract. And apparently the word on the street is that as soon as that those 3 years are up, he's done playing golf. He's going to retire.
Yeah, well, that's the money is incredible. You know, it's we could almost take you into your, because I'm sure you're a big sports fan.
So I'm a huge, NFL, I'm a diehard sports fan.
So with the NFL, look at the money they're making. Like, I know. Make money. I mean,
it used to be baseball that gave all the money out. Now, all of a sudden, it was the NBA, and now NFL is obviously, NFL has been doing it for a long time. But the problem with those NFL guys is that a lot of them don't have guaranteed contracts. And when you get cut, all of a sudden, you lose your actual salary. So you hear about these big numbers that get out. But if you get cut from a team, all of a sudden, you're not getting paid on that contract anymore. So a lot of guys now are starting to build in those guarantees into their contracts, whether or not they get cut and so forth, they still get paid. But yeah, that used to be a big thing with the NFL, and the NFL is where you got the shortest career length. So you don't have a long life in the NFL due to the contact, injuries, and things along those lines.
Guys making $20 million a year there.
Yeah.
The quarterback switches teams and gets a 4-year deal for $20 million. So you're saying if he's hurt, if he gets hurt, they don't guarantee that money. But what about a guy like Russell? Well, you know, the quarterback that left Seattle.
Yeah, Russell Wilson going to the Broncos.
Sort of stunk the other day there, but I still see it in him. But he's going to get old, right? Now, his money would have been guaranteed, right? Would it
be guaranteed? Yeah, so his was guaranteed. And normally now when they announce contracts, they announce how much of it's guaranteed. Like ESPN does a really good job of that, of announcing, oh, he's got a $200 million contract, $112 million of it's guaranteed. So there is always usually that little bit of gap. I think his was fully guaranteed, though. So, I mean, heck of a move on his behalf. But of course, once you leave somewhere, it's like breaking up or getting a divorce, right? You know, that other party doesn't talk so highly of you anymore. And sure enough, Seattle has talked quite a bit about how Russell Wilson was becoming Hollywood because of his wife, Sierra, who's a musician and singer, and that he started getting all that Hollywoodness to him. Now, how much of that is real? Obviously, it's a lot of hearsay back and forth between, but it almost kind of feels like, you know, that bitterness between exes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Very interesting. So what would be your, you know, I'm just thinking out loud, you know, thinking, innovating the space, like maybe, you know, maybe we could interview podcast people and then, you know, and have experts at their podcast. Maybe I should take it that way. I'm kind of getting bored with construction. I pretty well mastered it. You know, my patents are getting licensed, by the way. I'm starting to make money on them.
Well, Martin, you're a genius, my friend. Let's be honest about it. I mean, you've got an IQ that goes through the roof.
Well, I had a medium tell me that the other day. You ever had a reading?
I'm terrified of them. I don't want to know, Martin.
I got a really good one. But people are going to think I'm crazy. And I know my ex-boss's employers and stuff, you know, but I like to be well-read. And, you know, I'm going to take any advantage I can. And to me, they're all good people. Like, they care, right? They're not going to be successful as a psychic or a medium if they're telling you stuff that you don't want to hear. I mean, most people say they just want to get your business, but you know, they dedicate. It's sort of like a football player. You know, the guy is, if he's good at something, he plays football. So I mean, the only people that can really keep the business going are the ones that can do it well. You know, I think you've got a good presence in your approach. So why don't you interview other famous podcast people? Like, just do not a pull hook one. Or YouTube.
It's a good question. No, well, it's interesting because Bobby and I, we went down the path to where we started off with a couple recap shows, so recapping some tournaments, and then we went straight with, I believe it was three caddies for other PGA Tour pros, and then we jumped into two PGA Tour pros, and we're like, hang on a second, like, we're starting to get messages from audience members and so forth saying, hey, I want more of you guys. So, you know, then we went back and we finally last night, after about 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say, of doing, because there was a ton of drama going on with LIV Golf and so forth. And we can't dive into that as much as we'd like to with the caddies and with the players, because here's the thing, they might get suspended. They might say too much. So we didn't want to put a lot of those guys in those positions. And with that, there was so much drama going on over the past several weeks. I mean, it's been a media haven in golf, and normally it's not that way. Normally in golf, it's like you're struggling to try to find topics to discuss and talk about. At least that's what happens when I watch some of the golf media that was out there before we had this Pull Hook Golf podcast. But now we just had the President's Cup, and we actually had on Siwoo Kim's caddy, who was his caddy for the first week. Imagine this, Martin. You are a caddy and you get the call to go caddy for one of the best players in the world, I'd say. I'm comfortable saying that about Siwoo. I mean, he's won the Players Championship and so forth. And that's actually one of his classic lines is, I'm player champ, bro. And so he says it in his Korean accent and everything, and it's pretty funny. But with that said, Camilo Villegas, who played on tour for a long time, his brother, Manuel, we call him Manny Villegas, he's caddied for his brother for a long time. And this is the first player that he's caddied for outside of his brother. And it was the very first event. So he's literally caddying for this player in the very first event. And it's the President's Cup. You know how much pressure is at a President's Cup? I mean, look at these stands behind me. That's the first tee box. So they're chanting, they're cheering, they're going nuts. And you wouldn't believe in hearing his stories, because caddying, a lot of it's like staying out of the way. Like, you don't want to turn your player to get them upset or piss them off or to do something to where you put yourself out there a little bit too much and then you're on the hook for that mistake. Well, that was not Manny. Manny was fearless. He was talking to him, telling him, motivating him, giving him strategy out there, even though it was the first time. So these two, and Siwoo for the international side, had the most amount of wins and the most amount of points. He went 3-1 over his four different competitions. So he was the stud of that international side. And after hearing Manny talk about it, my goodness, it makes it hard not to think that Manny played a pretty big role in helping him get through that. And Bobby's caddied for Siwoo in the past too.
He was on your show.
Yeah, he was on the show yesterday. So it actually dropped this morning.
Is that season two? You know, season two, whatever.
We're season two now. So I broke it out because originally my co-host on the show was a guy named Mikey Perez. And Mikey Perez is Pat Perez's brother. If you know Pat Perez, who played on the PGA Tour, and Pat's gone over to LIV Golf now. And we started going down that path. And then Mikey really decided that he wanted to continue playing professional golf. He had just gotten a knee replacement done. I mean, younger guy, like, he's 3 years younger than his brother, Pat. And so he actually had, and he's probably, I hate to even say this, but he's probably more talented than Pat. But a lot of what comes up, and you're going to hear this when you hear people within golf, and especially the players, like Manny Villegas said the same thing, and Bobby said it about him, that Manny probably had more talent than Camillo, but Camillo ended up being the PGA Tour star, right? And Manny never ended up making it to the PGA Tour. Same thing goes with Mikey and his brother Pat. Mikey actually probably had more talent, but it's all between the ears. And if you can't get that part quite right, then that talent never comes to full fruition. And that's where, for him, he always had that in the back of his mind as to, I want to make it. I want to go back out. I want to try again. And, you know, us pros, we get that, you know, there's always that kind of feeling of, oh, I can still do this. I can still go out. And so he was feeling good about his knee and he decided to start going back out and playing. So we broke it out from season one when he decided to go out and start playing again. And then just so happened that we had Bobby Brown on the show for a three-part series, and Bobby showed some interest and wanted to be the co-host. And he's like, what's going on with this situation? And I explained to him what Mikey was doing.
He's good.
Oh, Bobby has done a fantastic job.
Shaken by anything, really. You know, he's
no. Cool, calm, and collected.
Like, what would you call the key to success? Emotional intelligence, maybe? For almost any business, right?
You know what I've learned over time and owning businesses and then also being an executive within businesses is that calmness always kind of wins. So even in volatile times, calmness tends to smooth everything to the point to where you can think clearly, because when you get into a volatile, or not a volatile, but more of a, you know, a stressful situation. And let's say that you're in a startup or you're in a new type of business, and all of a sudden there's these tumultuous times to where you don't know if the company is going to make it or not. Staying calm and being able to think clearly really helps you get through those times. And that's one thing that I've seen from a lot of successful people. Now, with that calmness, everybody has a breaking point. So everybody has some type of temper at the end of the day. And that's what I've realized too, is like, you know, I stay as calm as I can for as long as I can, but eventually you need that outlet, and working out is a great way to get it out. But you know, sometimes you just got to yell and scream, and don't show that to your team though. That's the key.
You're just doing it at home or something.
Yeah. Just going outside and just screaming at the top of your lungs.
Playing music in your car, I guess.
There's been a few of those days.
You listen to my stuff.
I do. You guys are so intellectual, though. Like, you even get over my head on some of this engineering stuff. I'm like, oh, man, following along. I love your show, though. That's why I agreed to come on.
We've had some good ones. Like, because of that podcast thing, scraping the barrel for guests, right? I ended up coming up with water. I ended up coming up with concrete that you wouldn't believe. So I have concrete that'll last 1,000 years, and it's economical. But yet we have a society that uses I'm going to go into it a bit.
Yeah, I like it.
Cements, right? And they crush the cement too much, and they measured everything on 28-day strengths, and then we're running out of sand. You know, there's these different things. But I started getting more focused there, and now I've come up with I'm working with a guy who sells basaltic fibers. So basaltic is a natural thing. It's like volcanic, right? And it's totally inert. And it's light. Same density as concrete. I can do 100,000 square feet of floor in a warehouse and not have one crack. Now, that's never been done. And so then I said, well, let's patent it, right?
Yeah.
And the patent guy said, well, no, basaltic has been combined with nanocolloidal silica before. And I said, well, come on. Like, what? Can we just put a patent pending for a while? But then what would I charge, right? So I don't really want to make money off everything. I want to give it. I'm sincere. I want to do this.
Well, that's because you're Canadian. See, I'm American. We're capitalistic over here. We try to make money off of everything.
Letters at me. You know,
if we buy a water filter, we're filling up water, taking it out to our neighbors and selling it for a dollar.
Hey, I got a geothermal that works in dry ground. It's unbelievable.
That is impressive. When you started telling me about that, my jaw dropped.
I just got the patent in the States.
Did so you? You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, no, all my patents are pretty well granted now. So that the guy in the States said, well, I got to give it to you. I've never seen anything like this. And what happens is I got a closed system, water circulates, and so maybe goes to 30 PSI inside this closed system to a water furnace. Then I put a check valve on it, and it kicks water out, because you don't want that annulus between the next steel liner, both highly conductive. And so then I put a hole. I just said, well, I should put a hole in that outside liner. So that overflow is what I got the U.S. patent for.
Wow. Never been,
you know, they've taken geothermal and put loops and you know, try to make a pond, and they've done some shit like that, but nothing like I'm doing. Because when you get the water overflowing, okay, you drill that hole a little bit bigger, and then you and then you get evaporative cooling, right? So that like evaporative cooling, you know, for instance, when you go swimming on the beach, right? Like you get wet, and it takes the heat off your body. So it takes the heat off that. It's an amazing pattern. It's a return on energy of 10, Matt. I got one at my place. So I got one right here now. See? And then I'm fucking around with, sorry, I'm sorry.
So then, you told me not to swear. I think that's the third one.
Boy, every time I look at you, I want to swear. No. So then I got this, I go to drill this hole. It was tough because I don't have drill rigs anymore. So then I hit a high water table at this place I got on the top of the hill in Goddard. So what the heck? So then I had to modify that. And then I'm looking at the 16-inch pipe, and I thought, well, I'll put my monopole windmill on. So now I have something called FEGO wind, okay? And I modify a 30-horsepower motor with high pole magnets in it. And at 15 kilometers an hour, that's metric, right? So that'd be like...
Yeah, you're screwing me now because anyways, I'm on the Imperial system over here.
15 miles an hour. It's not a big wind, right?
My Scottish buddy does this to me all the time too. So don't think you...
I'm the same way the other way though. I mean, we got to, you know, it's kind of understanding it's a problem for me to figure out sacks of cement and the pounds and all that stuff. I can do it, but you know, I need a piece
of paper. There's a lot of conversion. That's what Google's for.
It's math. I'm a value engineer. I'm not supposed to be the detail. Anyway, right. So I do this thing and then I fold my patent lawyer up, and she says, "Oh, you can't do that. You can't." And then I said, "Wait a second. Has it ever been done?" And when you do a windmill next to a house, typically it's a lattice windmill, and now I've got a very stiff foundation on a monopole. I can put it right next to the house, which reduces all your lines, Dave, all your runs. And so then I got my system, I have a 10 kilowatt windmill. And then my return on my geothermal is 10 on the inputted energy. So I got a 10,000 square foot building that's off grid with that one pile.
Now that's crazy. Tell me you had a windmill, Martin. Yeah, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, and it's really cool. One of the guys I did my podcast with, Matteo Fergoni, we got to talk about
golf. Yeah, yeah.
I think golf is probably better. This stuff.
No. I did a project as a kid and I made a windmill. So,
so it's near and dear. I'll see you when I get it going. So I'm using the guy in Boston, Matteo. He was on my podcast. He's really bright, 36 years old, mechanical engineer. And he's just making the vertical blades. So it's a 10-foot diameter vertical blade on a 20. And it's all stress analysis and everything for a hurricane, right? Because he can do that stuff.
And that's hidden right now in Fort Myers. So,
yeah, there you go.
God bless them down there. That's where my Scottish buddy is, down in Fort Myers right now. And we've been texting all day because I'm like, hey, keep me up to speed. I'm hoping that the cell towers don't go out. But so far, so good. I mean, they're kind of still in the mix of it. But sorry, you said hurricane, and I thought of that right away. And I'm like, I've already talked about my Scottish buddy, Sean. So, yeah, he was actually on the podcast several episodes ago. He did a guest appearance and was one of my special co-hosts that I brought on. And he's a golf pro.
You still have the... It's you and Bobby, but then 50% of the time, a guest?
No. So, I mean, it's Bobby and I, and then, you know, we'll bring on guests as we kind of deem not necessary, but as like they can help with topics. Like when, for instance, if Bobby wasn't at the President's Cup, so he wasn't like, he's caddied in President's Cups before, he's caddied in Ryder Cup, so he knows the experience. But we wanted somebody that was in the heat of the moment out there and could give us, and Manny actually took us through, there was a very kind of controversial match between Siwoo and Justin Thomas. And that was the final match, the first match of the final day. And those two, you know, afterwards, Justin Thomas was like, there were some things that really pissed me off about him and some of the tactics that he did and so forth. And
what did he do? Like, what would be?
So he shushed the crowd after making a putt and winning the hole, and then gave a huge fist pump afterwards. And Justin Thomas took a little exception to that and wasn't too happy, but man, I'm telling you, like hearing from Manny, like what was going through his mind and what was going through Siwoo's mind, it's pretty cool to hear.
I saw that some of that. Yeah.
And of course, this goes back years. So golfers don't forget. So Siwoo, Justin Thomas beat him at a match play out in Texas about, I think they said like 5-6 years ago. I can't remember exactly. We were having too much fun on the podcast last night, so I can't remember the details behind it. But basically, JT during the match didn't give Siwoo Kim a 2-foot putt and made him putt it. And afterwards, he's like, can you believe he make player champ, putt 2-foot putt. Can you believe? And so Bobby was his caddy at the time. So Bobby knew this story. Yeah, so in match play. So if you're playing one-on-one in match play, and so that's what the President's Cup, that final day, they're playing one-on-one against each other. And so Justin Thomas never gave, or he didn't give Justin Thomas a 3-foot putt. And that's what started it all. And JT was upset, but he was 2 up. He ended up making the 3-foot putt, but he got in his head a little bit. And when I asked Manny about it, Manny's like, no, it wasn't like he wasn't doing it from a gamesmanship standpoint, but in the back of his mind, yeah, he didn't forget. And even after the round, apparently, he's like, because I guess JT beat him 5 and 6. So 5 up with 6 up with 5 holes to play. So 6 and 5 was what he beat, or Justin Thomas beat him originally. Well, after Siwoo wins on the very last hole and makes a putt to win, he goes 6 and 5, player champ win. So, it was just, I mean, these are the stories that you just don't get. And that's what I love about the podcast and being able to do this, because like Bobby's a legend on tour. Like Bobby's the one who got Manny Vajegas the job with Siwoo Kim to caddy for him, because Siwoo Kim fired his guy right before the last tournament and needed a caddy for the President's Cup. And so Bobby's the one who brokered that entire deal. And Bobby does this because Bobby studies guys. He studies young guys on the Korn Ferry Tour. And he really does. He acts like a caddy broker almost, because there's not somebody else that really does this other than agents or players that know of caddies. So yeah, it's a pretty cool experience. And it just brings in, gives the audience the inside, the realness to golf. And that's what I love about the name too, Pull Hook, because it's a miss, right? It's a miss hit. But pros hit them, amateurs hit them. A lot of times, yeah, you might say banana cut or a huge slice out to the right. But that's where, you know, everybody does it. So we're bridging that gap between the everyday golfer and the professional golfer. And we're turning it into one world rather than having it be these two separate entities away from each other that are separated. And I think the fans appreciate it, our audience loves it, and that's what we bring on a weekly basis. But I want to go back to that windmill, because that windmill I still can't get over. So that building, it's, you said it's a 10,000 square foot building that is completely off the grid, because
one drill shot, like 148 inch hole, and like I'd still tightening all the bolts and everything, trying to hook up the wires and bugger trades, but I know it's going to work. Cause I know, like, I just know.
Yeah, you're an engineer.
That works, and all these things together will work better. And so the geothermal is really a magic water table. Now you picture all the dry problems in the States, right?
Yeah.
All you need is a well, and I take the inner pipe and I seal it with the outer pipe with non-shrink concrete, like 3 feet in the bottom, and then fill that puppy up, you know, let's say 50 feet, right? Go as high as 50 feet, go up this, this steel stuff's easy to get. But most people are running plastic loops with glycol. Got to have a special permit and glycol, you know, you got to be, well, this is totally earth honoring, right? Earth friendly water. And I figure 5 gallons, you'd have to sacrifice about 5 gallons an hour in order to overflow properly. And that, and you know, it's interesting because on the outside of the liner, it's a steel liner. The water actually capillaries right up to the bottom of the hole all the way around that liner. And it's like a 1-inch hole. It's amazing. But I'd seen something else in my career that made me think of it. And the guy was complaining about it. It never worked in dry ground, but it worked in Seattle and Boston where he had sales offices. And it was a helical pile that was sealed. And he put, you know, 5 every 10 feet in the square. So that'd be 25 piles. And that's pretty inexpensive to screw those in and hook on water and plumb them all the way around. And I was intrigued by it. So I would travel around and learn. And I always ask good questions. Right?
You do.
And I always spent time with the guy who was running the place, right? And that's the guy who said, well, in Seattle and Boston, right? I can't pump it out because of the high water table. Like, I can't exhaust those piles. But in Texas, where he was trying to do something else, dry ground. And I never forgot it. And then when I got into this, I thought, well, you know, why can't I create that water table that guy talked about? So I fill that annulus up. Right. So let's say it's 24 inch and 72 inch. That's probably going to be the most marketable one. 20 ton heat cool. And you can do 5 a day with a drone, 5 a day. But if you're going 200 feet in dry ground, your return on energy is maybe 2.5. But the plastic loop, it's in a grouted hole. You got to, you know, it takes you a week to do the hole or 3 days. Right. So in the commercial market, it's a winner. And, the guy that I'm meeting tomorrow, give him honorable mention, he runs a huge outfit in Toronto and he's in Vancouver and he wants the geothermal. He's tracked by the geothermal. Even though I got that bathtub saving $8 million patent at FE H2O lock, toothache on that one, but they're all good. And see what I got here? I got this marketing material. I'm showing it now.
There you go.
They got it all laid out from the website. Nobody looks at a website properly. It's over in that other what column. It's over there. It's over there. I was always pretty good at marketing, you know, but the business degree or just trying to be better. And now I've got almost the emotional intelligence thing, too.
There you go.
Yeah, quit drinking. So anyway, it's good, Matt. And we've got to figure out something that we can do again, right? But I'm thinking that it's get that Flynn guy, right? You bring that Flynn guy on.
Pat, like, Flynn.
Can he come on?
I don't know. We can always reach out to him, you know? Right? We'll reach out to him from Mission Matters and see what he has to say. But yeah,
you
I mean.
You get me on Joe Rogan, but I decided I didn't want that.
I know. We reached out. We reached out actually twice to see if Joe, because he was going through a lot of engineers and so forth for a couple different episodes that he was trying to do. So we had reached out and we wanted to get you on because, I mean, is there anybody better than Martin Hollowell when it comes to engineering? Come on.
Well, tell him I got 1,000-year concrete.
Yeah.
I could talk about that because a big platform, it would do more purpose. I don't need the ego thing, right? It would just be have more purpose. You know, it's so important to society. When you're dealing with, road salts, which is, you know, lots of the Northeast, Northwest.
Oh, yeah. It's what deteriorates all the, so, I mean, that's why I popped a tire on FDR.
25 years they're rehabbing. Honest to God, they're jacking the Jersey barriers and all of
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, that FDR, that it's terrible. Or East Side Highway, I mean, or the West Side Highway on it just in Manhattan. So I used to drive that all the time to go up to my sister's because she was up in Fairfield, Connecticut. And so when I was living in Manhattan, I would take the West Side Highway and go up. And man, I remember it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And that became so bad. Martin, you couldn't drive without hitting a pothole. I mean, that road was
they're putting netting under girders and shit. Anyway, it's a terrible thing because the recycle, the redo is, you know, causing us more. And then they overdo that. Right? So in terms of the patching or the chipping or the demolition or whatever, and you still got that shitty concrete underneath there. So anyway, this E5 company or let's say nanocolloidal silica, it's complete resistance to road salt.
No kidding.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Put as much as you want on it.
Oh, this should be everywhere in the Northeast and the North.
It's every 80% less permeable and proven to have a complete resistance to road salt.
I mean, that would be a game changer. I mean, why? So is the hardest thing
is telling people, I want to tell people, okay?
Is it the hardest thing to just, when you know you have something like this, like, is it frustrating that you just can't get the right people's ears in order to get this information out there to get them to actually do it?
Oh yeah. And you know, construction is such a big industry. So you have all these companies sort of talking about their technology, but not really being meaningful, and they have relationships, right? So they have relationships, and I'm 3 hours from Toronto, so I ain't going there often, right? I'm going there tomorrow to sell my patent license, right? To this guy. So this guy's got, well, I shouldn't say it, you know, I'll probably get banned off.
well, then let's not say it on this one. We'll save that for after you get it done.
Let's just say that, you know, they got lots of money, right? We'll just say they seem to have lots of money. And my little bar is so low, I'm only charging $100,000.
Yeah, that's nothing. It's dropping the bucket for a bigger business.
Exactly. I mean, when you can save that kind of money for your clients, and it's a game changer. I'm giving them the mix design, and I'm saying to them, well, you know, this, but they have the influence. So really it was a question of me getting that first couple steps, right? And then having the voice of the master licensee who would have, let's say, 75 brokers and all those connections with all those Italian guys, right? Because a lot of, I'm giving it away, but a lot of the Italian guys own the development business. So they're getting negotiated work, right? But they still like to save money.
Yeah.
And people care about the planet. I don't care who they are.
That's actually something I want to ask you about. So I think I saw, maybe it was a comment on a post, because you're quite active on LinkedIn. And I follow LinkedIn quite a bit when it comes to like my day-to-day with Mission Matters and so forth. Not so much on the golf podcast as much. But when it comes to what we do over at Mission Matters, you know, everything's very business related, and all of the podcasts and so forth are business related. So,
well, it's certainly, you know, my thing is, when it comes to innovation, you can't stop. I mean, you can't stop. I mean, it is important that we try to get it out of the built environment.
That's why I'm curious if, like, some of the thought process is, like, everybody knows that these lithium batteries are terrible for the environment and so forth, that it's like, you know, maybe at some point we'll be able to figure out and innovate a way to repurpose this or reuse this so that it's not just going back into the earth and ruining it. I mean, I'm big on that as well, to where, like, here in Arizona, for instance, because of all the concrete, we're talking about concrete, because of it all and all of the buildings and all of the metal structures, like, the temperature from over the past 100 years has exponentially risen, because as soon as nighttime comes, it used to get cold here in Arizona, even though it'd be 100 plus in the afternoon. But now it just resonates all that heat off of all the metal and all the concrete. So they're actually putting together some plans for shading of all of the concrete and everything, and to add plants on top of buildings. And like, this is a 20-year plan that they're going through now, to where they're going to try to lower the temperature. And apparently, according to whatever engineers they're working with and so forth, that they're planning on being able to lower the temperature to basically revert it back 40 years. So we'll see if that actually works out. Like, that's the stuff that I'm interested in, because it's like, yeah, that's, you know, if we can help in any way, I'm all about it. That's why I love what you're doing.
The geothermal, you know, like 5 feet down, it's still 50 degrees, man. And that's the key.
That's crazy.
So you got to get that 50 degree, right? And then send it back down again, right?
Yeah.
Just circling. And so you need the right heat exchanger, but you got to use water. You don't go deep. I believe that, I can tell you, you know, weather modification and stuff like that. And, you know, it isn't what it appears. You know, you know those chemtrails that go through the sky?
Oh, yeah.
There's no such thing. Really? Those are bypass engines. They're dropping shit.
Dropping knowledge on me here, Martin.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
You know, I can give you the right, well, you phone me on my private line. I can give you the right the guys to follow.
Perfect.
Well, because you might as well be informed.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Now, one other thing that I do have to mention here, Martin, and this is for the audio listeners who can't see your golf shirt right now, But my God, is that a sharp golf shirt. Now he's got this, it's like a red and orange, looks very Euro. And it's just, it's a sharp looking golf shirt. If you get a chance to watch Martin's YouTube channel with the podcast, you're going to see this. But if you're on the audio listening to it on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, you know, I'm describing this thing and it is, it's two-tone. It is a sharp looking shirt. There's like a very modern, like, oh gosh, it's like a pocket there. Is that a real pocket or is that just a design on your chest?
Well, it's a real pocket, actually.
Oh my gosh, you can put the pens in there and everything.
Here, you know, I need my glasses and my calculator in this pocket. I got to have a pocket. Kind of a nerdy thing.
Hey, you never know when you need a pen. That's fantastic.
I'm always looking. I buy boxes of them. They're all over the place, right? Because, you know, you want to take notes. I journal everything. Eh? That's the key, journals.
You know, I've got about 5 journals, and you're spot on with that, by the way. So I've got one for personal, one for business, and then there's a couple for ideas of other potential businesses down the road, or even like all the logos. So like this pull hook logo, I designed that. I've designed, there's another company I have in New York called Golf Pros NYC. That's turned more into a digital platform now because we used to have a physical location in New York City to where golf lessons were given in golf simulators. That being said, designed that logo. There's been quite a few logos that I've designed, but that's another journal to where like you'll look at these sketches. You'll be like, how in the hell did you end up getting there from that? And it's just a lot of, whenever it comes to design and things like that, but journaling is a huge thing. So everybody listening, Martin, you are spot on that one.
Yeah. See, we're like brothers. But anyway, it's been a pleasure, Matt.
It has, Martin.
Right on time.
Beautiful.
You got anything to close with? Just basically,
what else you want out of me? You want the inside scoop?
I'm good, Matt. I appreciate you coming on the show. And I think, what do you think? Maybe I should vary the topics. I could keep one a week going.
When it comes to podcasting, especially, like, it's always good to have that refreshing kind of out of the box that isn't the same over and over and over again. And I think we've seen that from Joe Rogan, for instance, because if you go back in the day, to when Joe Rogan, I mean, he's been doing this for ages. That's what a lot of people don't realize. They're like, oh, Joe Rogan's the number one podcast. He's the largest, got that big Spotify deal, but he's been doing it for over a decade. I think it's 13 or 14 years that he's been doing his podcast for, and it started very small. And I mean, I listened to him going back probably 10 years ago is when I first started listening. And, I heard his very first advertisement that was on the show and everything. And it's neat because he started to get outside of the box. And that's when he started getting into these longer talks to where he's just a very inquisitive person and starts to ask a lot of questions. So no matter what their expertise is, he's kind of pulling things out. And I think that kind of set the precedent within podcasts. And then, you can get outside of the box from time to time. Yeah, of course, like having your show being about engineering, and this is where a lot of your audience is interested around and learning about engineering. Like, I wouldn't steer too far outside of it, but at the same time, like having a show here and there to where you bring on somebody like me that is a former golf professional that, has a golf podcast, but also is interested in engineering. And, we have a dynamic to where we work together on the podcast and so forth, that it is always good to kind of break outside from time to time and not have it be so structured.
Yeah. Well, value engineering, actual verb, measurable noun. Remember that. Do it in your everyday life.
Like, I love it.
And I believe that it should apply to everything. And it's much more important because that's where the creativity comes, right? If you can get it down to 2 words, it could solve everything. Lower CO2. That's kind of my thing, right? Measurable CO2 levels. Lower is the actionable thing, right?
Yep.
So that's what I started the footprint engineering effort at. But I think it can apply to make money and live golf, right?
Yeah.
Make money. And if you do it ethically, maybe what Live Golf error is, they just, that was really motivated by the players then. For some reason, I thought maybe it was the Saudis, you know.
Well, it depends on who you ask about that one. Yeah, I mean, the Saudis approach Greg Norman. Greg Norman's been trying to set up a league for ages. He's had a very tumultuous relationship with the PGA Tour, going back to where he skipped a meeting with Arnold Palmer back in the day, where all the top players were getting together and he shunned him. And like, that was one of the things that started building that resentment between Greg Norman and the PGA Tour, because Arnie was kind of the face of it at the time, along with Jack Nicklaus. And it's just, you know, when you have something where you have a vendetta. Or a vendetta.
By Brian DeChambeau, right?
Bryson, yeah. Bryson. He's fighting ropes out here. I mean, he's having a tough time. He's got injuries. He's got, yeah.
But I think he pushes the weights too much. What do you think?
100%. I mean, he pushed his body. So this was one that I used to talk about with bodies. As soon as he started bulking up in the very beginning, I go, his body's going to break down. Super fast. Like, you cannot, and like, he loves to say that he's like this scientist guy and that he's obsessed with science and blah blah blah. Well, we've debunked that one, that his college coach is like, yeah, his worst subject in college was science. Like, he was terrible, like ended up with a C-. So he's not that when it comes to science and numbers and statistics and all this. Like, he loves to come across as that guy. But it's all a facade.
How to work out, right? Rogan's got it figured out for working out.
Oh, Rogan's a beast. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get kicked by Joe Rogan. He'd break my leg in half.
Jordan Peterson, he's Canadian. He's really popular.
Is he?
Yeah, it'd be worth you watching his new podcast. Spotify got him.
Yeah, so, well, I'm not familiar with him. I'm going to have to take a listen.
Really, eh?
Yeah.
Where have you been? So...
Under a rock, Martin, under a rock.
Obviously. But anyway, he's obviously popular, but he gets some big audiences, right? Like, he's pulling ahead of Friedman. He's number two to Rogan now.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, I got to check him out then.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson.
See, I'm such a big Apple podcast guy that it's actually deterred me from listening to Rogan. That's why I love having podcasts everywhere. I think the exclusivity stuff really segments. It's like what's going on with the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. We can relate the same thing in podcasting. It's like with Spotify stealing these people away, it takes away from a lot of people who, you know, their platform isn't Spotify. It doesn't drive more people to Spotify. Like, that's the one thing that I've noticed. It more so makes people stop listening to the show. And I really have a tough time with that, because that's why I want the PGA Tour and LIV Golf to talk. And I've been saying this for about 6 months now, close to 6 months, really at the start of the Pull Hook Golf podcast. I've been saying the same thing. And I'm like, they just need to work this out and to work together instead of apart. I know there's the political side and so forth with Saudi Arabia and people's feelings
so much
around
money.
That.
Talk about
Well, and they're a non-for-profit. Like, they need to change. Like, yeah, they've got... So they're running in... Like, Wall Street Journal's done a few articles now of looking into the private jet usage by Jay Monahan. And, like, they're starting to get under a microscope. So I suspect that the PGA Tour will go away from the non-for-profit designation and go for-profit within the coming year. Or... maybe not within the coming year, maybe within the next 2 to 3, because it's not that easy to just move over.
Is it all about making NBC money and always?
Yeah, they're the charity clients. No, the PGA Tour does a great job of like giving back to communities. Everywhere where they hold a tournament, they do a lot of charity work and give a lot back to the community. So that's where the non-for-profit side comes in. But they can do those same things as a for-profit company. And that's why I think they're going to have to move over to become for-profit, especially because of the microscope that they've started to become under.
Very good. Think about that idea of doing like guys like me, and you be the host of the podcast Hockey Stick or something like that. You know, something. I'm Canadian, eh? Hockey Stick.
I know that stuck with you. I love that stuck with you.
I talk about it all the time now. No, I don't really. I'm not that worried about the number of views. It's not like I can sell my patents tomorrow.
The podcasting hockey stick, like there should be a microphone at the end of that. Like that should be the logo, right? Oh my gosh, there you go. We've got a show, Bill, right there.
Joe Rogan's. Hey, I'll send you the good thing about Peterson, you know, like Rogan does the shorts.
Yeah.
You know, in the shorts. But Peterson does a lot of stuff that's not the official Spotify channel.
Hmm.
And if he gets on the Spotify channel, he'll have two-part shows and they'll go to like 3 hours. And it's all intellectually correct. I mean, that guy is, when he was a kid, he read a book a day.
Wow.
His dad was a good influence, read a book a day.
He's read a book a day more than I've done in my entire life.
Yeah. Anyway, so then he took clinical psychology, right? So he was UFT, didn't like the, you know, the clamp down from the left on the university thing. And they were trying to stifle him. He just became bigger. And, but he's a major force. Like I would even have to say anybody, you'd enjoy him.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
You'd enjoy him.
Yes. Send him over. Shoot me an email with the link.
Okay, I
love it.
Anyway, thanks again, Matt. And,
It's my pleasure. Actually, let me give your audience a quick little info piece here. So if anybody wants to check out the Pull Hook Golf Podcast, got to give my little plug here, right? So the Pull Hook Golf Podcast is at pullhookgolf.com. That's our website. You can actually access the podcast. We have every platform for podcasts, just like Martin, for instance, here with the Value Engineering Experts. So you can access either of the podcasts on all of the major podcasting platforms. And with that said, we also have some merchandise too. So I don't know if you've seen the hats, Martin, but the hats are really, really, they're something. I mean, now Troy Merritt, who Bobby Caddy's for on the PGA Tour.
I'll mail you this shirt. I'll wash it first.
That's beautiful. What size are you?
And then you send me a hat.
you seem smaller than I am.
Yeah.
But that pullhookgolf.com and then also pullhookshop.com for the merchandise. And then, Martin, where can everybody find your podcast?
Well, it's through you, I guess. Value Engineering Experts.
There you go.
It's on Spotify. It's on the YouTube thing.
Yep.
It's
Apple Podcasts. I mean, the plethora. Yeah,
Apple Podcasts and... you know, the guys do a great job. Adam Torres is a real gentleman. And we'll be hitting that hockey stick like Wayne Gretzky.
There you go. I love it. Well, Martin, thanks again for having me on. What a great idea this was. I had an absolute blast. Thanks again for having me.
Next time, you know, we'll let you drink.
There we go.
See you later.
Have a good one, Martin.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Value Engineering Experts Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Footprint Engineering, a sustainability-focused civil engineering firm focused on helping owners pick earth-honoring systems that lower cost, schedule, and carbon footprint. Learn more at www.footprintengineering.ca.